Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th of February, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can... Oh, look, I need to go even farther over. News, views, stuff you can use, a few things to lose, something to choose. That'll be our poll of the week based on this story. Since 1996, the whistleblower site Cryptome has been posting sensitive government and corporate documents. For a while this week, Cryptome was stricken from the web after releasing the Microsoft Online Services Global Criminal Compliance Handbook, a spy guide for law enforcement detailing what data Microsoft has, keeps, and can relinquish. Since most of you are Microsoft users, there are a few tidbits of information you need to know before purchasing, well, Windows or Xbox Live points or logging on to Office Live or sending an email through Hotmail. The Global Criminal Compliance Handbook is a quasi-comprehensive explanatory document meant for law enforcement officials seeking access to Microsoft's stored user information. It also provides sample language for subpoenas and diagrams on how to understand server logs. Microsoft keeps user information related to its online services. The data ranges from past emails to credit card numbers. The information is kept for a designated period of time, sometimes forever. The sites referenced in the spy guide, the Microsoft Online Services Global Criminal Compliance Handbook, are Windows Live, Windows Live ID, Microsoft Office Live, Xbox Live, MSN, Windows Live Messenger, Hotmail, and MSN Groups. Accessing personal information from Xbox Live accounts, for example, could be a big problem for 23 million subscribers, especially since Xbox Live keeps more data than many of Microsoft's other services. It depends on what service you have as to what it keeps. For example, is the Windows Live ID, which is that one-stop shop for user information retention, used on multiple sites to limit the number of usernames and passwords you have to have. Windows Live could allow law enforcement agencies to access tons of your personal web surfing information. Hotmail account registration records are retained for the life of the account. So if you do switch over to Gmail, as so many millions have, and let your Hotmail account lapse, that email is typically deleted after 60 days of information. Xbox Live, of course, includes your credit card number, your phone number, and your email account. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, and that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, of course, about Microsoft's spy guide. And the choices are, I knew it all along, I'm not really surprised, they're no worse than any of the others, and I refuse to believe it, of my beloved Microsoft. So far, with 38 votes in, 61% of you are not really surprised, 18% of you are say they're no worse than any of the others, 13% of you knew it all along, and 3 of you refuse to believe it, of your beloved Microsoft. And of course, you're clearly going to have more to say about it than that. So when you are done with that, take a look at the little yellow box underneath it, and you'll see if you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can then enter your opinion. I hope you'll keep it clean. 4 of you have put in stuff so far. Very little of it is polite to Microsoft, I have to admit. And if you go to the Cryptome website, cryptome.org, and I'm sure Steve will be putting that on the...
I tried to open up the actual link to the Microsoft Security Guide and got stopped by the proxy server here at the school for pornographic content.
Yeah. Yeah. It is surprise, called cryptome.org, CRYPTOME. Steve's got it on our
cryptome
website.
Cryptome itself works for us here.
Right, cryptome.org. And it's not just Microsoft. It's dang near everything. There's Microsoft and PayPal and MySpace and the military and Israel and BBC Radio and Facebook and AOL and Skype and Ning and the U.S. Postal Service and a whole bunch of other things. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff at that site, and you should go check it out and see what it has to say. And then, of course, since you're already at AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Well done. Even with the wrong mouse in your hand, you got there in time. Very nice.
Multitasking between a Mac and a PC.
Yeah, it's got to be interesting.
It's different.
Take a look at what I do there. I put out a newsletter. I was a little deficient this week because it's the end of the quarter at RIT, and it was a busy
interesting
couple of weeks. But yeah, so we do that, and that's the cool thing that we do. And so please check it out there, and then come back, of course, and check out the rest of what we do at soundbites.org. And we're here on the radio. We're also, and let me give you our numbers. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 585-966-5299 or 585-966-5299. Or, of course, if you're outside the 585 area code, it's toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. You can also join us on FNET if you are an IRC user at #soundbites. You can join us on Twitter. We're at sound_bites. Well, that's interesting.
We're everywhere.
And of course, we're at Ustream now. So if you go to Ustream, you can see us live at ustream.tv/channel/soundbitesradio. Now, if you can't remember all of that, it's all on our website at soundbites.org.
You may have to scroll down.
You may actually have to scroll down, but during the show, there's a link to FNET. In fact, you can get online right from there. You can check out the live audio stream, the show cam, the Ustream live video stream, and it's all right there. There's links to see us on Twitter, link to see us on Facebook, a link about joining us every Friday on Second Life. You can see our Soundbites technical tweets. I follow certain technical people on the Soundbites Twitter thingy, and you can see that there. And there's one for Facebook as well, except that's oddly not showing up on this machine, but that happens.
Filtered,
of course, it's filtered.
Yeah.
But the other thing folks got to realize, though, is we can't always reply to everything that's being, like, in the YouTube.
Yeah, you can follow us. We're not following you because we're doing a radio show. It takes of our time.
They sit there and say, but you didn't get back to me. Well, yeah, we're kind of busy.
Yeah, as if we're lucky, during the breaks, and they're not commercial breaks anymore, so they're not 4.5 or 5 or 6 minutes long when we could, you know, take a shower and a nap and go downstairs and get something to eat.
Well, I think on the average, you're about 2 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes max.
At max, and sometimes, you know, people say, this one's a minute, so we don't have a lot of time to go perusing and wandering about the internet. Mostly we have time to sit back and go,
yeah,
before we gear up for the next
blow
segment.
Our nose
so,
and...
Yeah, so if we don't get back to you, it's not because we hate you. We love each and every one of you individually and collectively, but we are in the middle of doing a radio show, and there's stuff we have to handle here. Poor Dave's like a cricket on a skillet, jumping around back and forth, trying to...
Keeps me young.
Keeps you something. I'm not sure.
It's got to do something. Yeah, really.
Do something. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller, case in point, is Dave. Where are you calling from, Dave?
Hi, I'm just traveling through the area. I'm actually from Utica, but I enjoy your show when I drive through here.
Well, you can pick us up.
I actually am a multitasker, too. I have a PC-based laptop, but an Apple desktop. And so I have a combination question. I know there's a lot of programs out there that offer to, quote, clean up your computer And I always have wondered how many of them are actually putting spyware on your computer. I know there's a lot of programs to clean up that stuff, adware, malware, bytes, et cetera. But I was wondering which one of those might be good programs and which are not legitimate programs. Well, and are there things that you might need on the Apple side to clean up your computer as well? Or is it not that much of a concern?
Well, on the PC side, I can testify that the stuff that we have listed for cleaning up your machine, as i.e. AVG, Super Anti-Spyware, and Malware Bytes, those will clean up all your stuff in your machine. Now, the other thing that we recommend for uninstalling stuff, instead of using that illustrious Microsoft Uninstaller program, there's a program called Revo Uninstaller. Revo Uninstaller will totally eliminate the program from the computer. Whereas Microsoft, they just turn off one bit, and it's still, in your registry. So if you install and uninstall, say, a software package 4 or 5 times, it's still in there in the registry 4 or 5 times. Whereas Revo will totally clean out the registry and your directories on your hard drive.
Okay. Well, I do have those programs that you mentioned, and I do use them.
Then you're golden.
It sounds like I'm doing the right thing.
You got it nailed.
I don't have Revo, so that's good information.
One of the big dangers is that a lot of the fake programs have very similar names, and they'll catch people unaware. There is Antivirus Plus is the bad one, and Antivir is the good one.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other big one? Internet Security 2010 is the bad one.
And 2009. And
Norton Internet Security 2010 is the good one. So it's very tricky.
There's another one out, and it's a legit program, but they're doing a scam now, is Reg Mechanic.
A lot of registry cleaners as well.
They're getting in there, and they'll get into your machine, and they'll sit there and say, oh, your machine's got all this stuff, this, and this. They're legitimate programs. But again, it's just a spoof in trying to scare you folks into buying a particular program and saying, oh, your machine is infested with all this. You need to get our program to clean it out and get your machine running faster. Wrong. It's just a scam to get more money out of folks and intimidate them.
Well, I stopped using the purchased spyware, purchased antivirus programs, meaning Symantec's program and the McAfee programs, and switched over to AVG because when using the Symantec program, every year when I loaded on the new program, it would not clean out some of the old stuff, and I always had problems. It ended up costing me $100, take it to my local repair shop and have them fix the problem.
Yeah, a lot of times there's a big program for the Mac called Spring Cleaning that will clean up extraneous files and preference files and settings files. And the problem with a lot of those is they'll scan your computer and then come up with a list. And here's the stuff I found. You still have to decide if you need them or not. And so if you delete the wrong thing, you might break a program that you didn't know was using that thing. So it can be tricky to run any of those cleaning-type programs. It's a little better on the Mac because most of the time your programs go into one place, the applications folder, so you can just drag that application to the trash and it's uninstalled. Sometimes they will also put things into the application support folder, and you can look in there. And so for example, Microsoft Office, there's a folder called Microsoft and application support, and you can drag that to the trash. A lot of programs are more so on the Mac side are much better about uninstalling themselves than they are on the Windows side.
Well, I have one more quick question for you guys, and I appreciate all the information. I have Microsoft Office for Mac, and I've been trying to figure out how, when I save a Word document, that it defaults to the .doc formatting, because I found that if I don't make sure that that happens when I send the file to somebody with a PC, they email me back and say that it's all just gobbledygook.
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with the Mac or PC. It's the Microsoft .docx format. Windows with Office 2007 and later, and on the Mac with 2008 and later, use the .docx format by default. What those users can do, if you're still using 2003, 2004 for Windows or Mac, is you can download the Microsoft OpenXML file format translator, which is actually the full name of it, which is annoying, and that will let those older programs open the .docx format. Or when you're saving on 2007 or 2008, when you do your first save or do a save as, you have the choice of picking .x or picking .doc or any of the other dozen formats.
Okay, is the .x format compatible with anything that somebody with a PC?
Yes, it's fully compatible with Microsoft Office, version 2007 or later. If they're still using 2003, they must download the Microsoft file converter, which is a free download from Microsoft.
Okay, well, they might not know that, especially when you're sending out things like resumes or things.
Right.
So your solution is to save it as a .doc.
Right.
In that case.
Right. When you're saving the document, save it as a .doc for maximum compatibility.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take...
Well, I appreciate all the answers, guys. It's good information, and enjoy your show.
All right, thanks. And you know that while you're in Utica, you can hear us online in any one of a half a dozen ways, including the Ustream and the live stream for audio. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Every Sunday evening, join me, Derek Lucas, for The Spectrum, where we find the mysterious side of jazz. Music to move your mind, body, soul, spirit, as well as help you do your homework. Every Sunday evening, 10 o'clock, here on Jazz 90.1.
I got a little gal down in New Orleans, boy, cooking ham hocks and collard greens. Hey, keep on chugging, mama.
Hello, I'm Mike Cuthbert, host of AARP's Primetime Radio. Barry Yeoman, contributing editor of AARP the magazine, went down south recently and found a story that kept on growing. It was the story of the blues. He found chapters of the story in various places, but more important than the locations were the people he met along the way. They are, in some cases, the last remaining custodians of a vital American musical tradition. Barry also met a man who's trying to preserve the music and the men and women who sing it. We call our program Truckin' the Blues Away, and it'll be heard right here.
Yay. Hear Truckin' My Blues Away on Sunday, February 28th at 6 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
When I was a kid, when I was listening to the radio all the time, it was like a portal to the world for me. You know, I grew up in a small town in Georgia, and, you know, it's like a connection to the outside world. You know, it was a special thing.
New artist Tim Brantley loves radio because it connects every day. Radio, always on, always free, always something new. Go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Listeners who listen on a regular basis may want to support Jazz 90.1 that way too. If your budget is organized around monthly expenses, it may be more convenient to support Jazz 90.1 monthly as well. For example, a pledge of $10 a month would mean $120 a year in support. The payment amount you choose is automatically made each month directly from your credit or debit card. You can stop the monthly payment at any time, and we confirm each payment by email. For more information about the Jazz 90.1 monthly gift option, call 966-2660 or visit us online at www.jazz901.org. With the monthly gift option, it's easier than ever for you to become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
Remember those old savings bonds you got for your birthday or graduation? Yeah, the ones you stuck away in a drawer and forgot all about? Well, after 30 years, those savings bonds have stopped earning interest, and you're losing money to inflation. In fact, Americans have billions of dollars of Series E savings bonds just sitting around. Find out if you have any savings bonds over 30 years old. Go to treasuryhunt.gov. Join the hunt at treasuryhunt.gov. A public service message from the Department of the Treasury.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, before we get to the phone, I need to read this little news item. Friend of the show, Chris Reich, sent this one in. Google and Yahoo get sued on a regular basis, often by tiny outfits with no chance of winning. But now those two companies are facing a much more serious lawsuit as Xerox, which has a market cap of almost $8 billion and a genuine legal team, is taking them to court. Xerox claims that Google and Yahoo have infringed on two patents it holds. One patent, issued in 2004, is for a way to automatically generate a query based on keyword searches. Yeah, that would be pretty much the heart of Google's business. The second patent, issued in 2001, is for a way of updating pages based on user reviews. Xerox would like to be compensated for Google and Yahoo's alleged infringement and also wants to bar them from using the tech again without its consent, which could probably be obtained via a licensing agreement. Of course, Yahoo and Google aren't liable to hand Xerox a blank check. One of Google's lawyers has already described Xerox's claims as being without merit, and neither Google nor Yahoo is the type to shy from a fight. This could turn into quite a legal battle then, and the operation of AdSense, AdWords, Google Maps, Google Video, YouTube, the Yahoo Publisher Network, Yahoo Search Marketing, Yahoo Shopping, and the YQ contextual search tool may be affected by the outcome. On the other side is a company we here in Rochester hold near and dear. Exciting times. So our question to you is, who are you rooting for? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Joanne did. Where are you calling from, Joanne?
Greece.
And what can we do for you?
I don't know if you can answer this or not, but we're going to Ireland and England and Scotland this summer. We've got a family with laptops, cell phones, digital cameras, iPods. How can we recharge those? As they're, do you know anything about over in Ireland how they?
In general, there are two basic ways to do it.
Okay.
If your device has a universal power supply in it, and many of them do, all you need is a plug adapter. And you can buy plug adapters at Radio Shack
or all over
the place. Apple sells what they call the World Adapter Kit for their computers and iPods that come with different plug
Apple does.
Yeah, for all the Apple products, okay. That lets you plug into the different outlets. Now, if you look on the power supply of your device, it will say 120/240 volts at 50/60 hertz. That means it's a universal power supply.
Okay.
If your power supply just says 120 volts, then you need a voltage converter as well. And they're big and clunky and heavy and actually kind of hard to find here in the U.S. But you'll find them in the other countries because they know a lot of visitors from the U.S. come over there.
Okay.
So the easiest way is to get the plug adapters for your universal power supplies. And then the other way is to actually get a voltage converter for that country you're in. Now, there's a website, and I'm not going to remember it offhand. I'll find it in a minute, that lists all of the different voltages in all the different countries and what plug they use. Because even if some countries will use different plug outlets, even though they are still 120 volts, but they use a different plug than we do here in the U.S.
Yeah.
So that you need a plug adapter for there as well.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to be dragging a laptop across if we can't use it over there.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you think of that website,
we'll have it posted on our country list. I just found it here on our website momentarily.
Okay, great.
Sure. All right. Have fun over there, and remember, in Ireland, they put mayonnaise on everything.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it does sound good, doesn't it? Yeah.
No, not really. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
It really is getting to the point where more and more people are citizens of the world in the sense that they do a lot of traveling. Mm-hmm. And making sure when you buy a new computer, if you're even vaguely thinking you might be getting out of the country, make sure that laptop, that camera, that MP3 player, that phone has a universal power supply with it, so that you can charge it wherever you go. You'll still need the adapter, but at least that's all you'll need as opposed to the big clunky
thing. And you're going to want to kind of watch your items over there too, because again, you know, the iPods, the iTouches, and all those are high theft items.
Yeah, they really are.
I mean, you know, around here, yeah, you can just go over to your local store and pick one up. But over there in Europe, they cost more money because they're being imported in, and there's fewer of them. I mean, You know, so it makes it a higher demand, you know, and they see you walking around with one. Theft is on their minds in the country.
And that website is electricoutlet.org. That used to be very complex, so it's nice they have a convenient one now. Ireland uses 230-volt, 50-hertz, and a Type G socket, but some parts of Ireland may still use a Type D socket.
So if you get one of those big kits.
Yeah, the World Adapter Kit comes with usually with 8 or 10 different socket adapters to be able to plug into any socket you want. And here in the United States, our socket isn't named. I guess we're just the U.S. socket. So yeah, the Type
socket
G,
to us.
Yeah, the Type G socket in Ireland and the U.K. is it's still three prongs, but it's got a vertical and two horizontal instead of ours that has a circular and two vertical. So it looks different.
Gaelic twist.
Yeah.
You're right.
The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
It's just like, you know, one standard I wish they would really come up on, and I'll give the Mac its due on this. I really like their pull-away power supply, you know, that it's magnetic.
The MagSafe, yeah.
I wish every laptop manufacturer would settle on that standard and make a universal power adapter for the laptops, because a laptop is a laptop is a laptop.
Even within the same model of Dell or HP or Toshiba, are the same brand, different models use different power supplies.
I mean, the magnet would mean so fewer repairs, because I get folks coming in and I say, well, this broke off. And you've heard me folks tell this story before. When they break off inside the computer, yes, you can see it very easily. But to repair that means you've got to strip that computer or that laptop down to like the day it was born, because the motherboard has to literally come out of that, flip it over, unsolder usually 4 to 5 points, clean them out, put in the new unit or adapter, solder it back in.
Yeah, it's easy to solder the connector on. It's a horrible pain to take the computer apart to get to the connector.
It's the hundreds of screws. Yep. And they'll go, well, it's right there on the corner.
Yep.
Yeah. And how do I get to that corner?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
They stop and think, and it's like, everything's got to come out.
Yeah, so you're looking at a couple, 3 hours labor to replace that. A
couple, three, like 4 or 5 sometimes, yeah. Depending, you know, how many screws on it. Yeah. At least on a PC, you can have, because Dan came up with this form now that we kept printed off, and he put it on the side of the refrigerator, that we have these little boxes, and when we set out the screws, he's got different names on it. And as we take out the screws, because they're pretty basic where they're coming from certain areas, we put all the screws in that little box. Nobody dares touch that sheet while it's laying on the bench.
Because double zeros and triple zeros. Some of Apple's new laptops use a triple Y connector. And like a Philips has a cross. This triple Y, and it looks like a Y.
Ooh.
And cool. A lot of us are thinking that so the average folk won't get inside the computer and screw something up.
Means another trip to Sears.
Actually, Sears didn't have it. I found it at Debbie's Supply.
Oh,
well, and I'm the only one on the Apple specialist boards that we all talk together with that actually found the real connector, because people have been asking, you know, where can I find this stupid screwdriver? Because Apple wants $40 for this triple Y screwdriver.
Of course they do.
Of course they do. Plus shipping.
Right. Debbie's, you can probably get it for a few bucks.
It was $3. Yeah.
Yeah. And you spend $1, I guess.
Yeah.
You see. All right. Dave is on the phone, we're going to take an email question. You can, of course, email us questions as well. This one's from Josh in Farmington, who writes, in the Security Tango, you suggest installing Chrootkit, RK Hunter, and Hyde. This is clearly Security Tango for the Linux Lambada. There are three parts to the Security Tango now. It used to be the Security Tango was only for Windows, but now there is, I have broken into three parts. There's the Windows Waltz, the Linux Lambada, and the Mac Arena. So you, momentary pause for obligatory groan, and we move on. So I suggest installing Chrootkit, RK Hunter, and Hyde. What is Hyde and what does it do? Actually, it's not Hyde, it's Unhyde. That's simply a stupid typo on my part. It's Unhide, and it's used by Check Rootkit and RK Hunter. So all you have to do is if you have Ubuntu or one of those, it got installed for you. But just on the safe side, you can use Unhide to look at various processes when you want to do something. So you can that actually comes in two versions: Unhide Linux 26 or just Unhide. It's a forensic tool to find hidden processes. Processes that are hidden by rootkits or any other technique. So there's both proc and sys, and of course the brute method to look at all of them. So it's something you might want to be able to use, but that you need to either know a lot about it or just let the other programs use it themselves. So Unhide should be installed for you. But when I eventually get home later tonight, I will fix that, and I apologize for the mistake on my part calling it Hide, not Unhide. So I better keep this message. Now we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Bodan.
Gentlemen, good Saturday afternoon to you.
And the same to you. You're calling from Rochester, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
All right.
I'm all shoveled out, and my driveway is ready to be used.
There you go.
Anyway, hey, what is going on with Microsoft? I have received in the last couple of days additional security updates. Update for Windows XP 2 came in yesterday or within the last couple of days, and actually a security update for Windows XP came in this morning. A bad month. I mean, they had 10 on the 12th of February and 3 additional in the last few days.
They're on a roll.
Well, I don't know. It just seems to be like, update for Windows XP, another update for Windows XP.
You had a
news
story about that, the Windows 7 genuine. What version of Windows are you running?
XP Home.
Okay.
SP3, right?
Yes, SP3.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon. I mean, maybe they're finally getting off their dead butts and doing a few more of the fixes instead of letting them set. You know, I mean, Microsoft has been known for the longest time to take their sweet time in getting around to some of them, even though they've known they're around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe, it was a slow month. Now with Windows 7 out there, they got a chance to update some of the others.
Speaking of updates, only because Adaware used to be part of your Security Tango back in the day.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's a new version, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, my work computer does still have Adaware and Super Anti-Spyware.
Mm-hmm.
If I run Super Anti-Spyware, it'll pick up tracking cookies and stuff like that. I delete them, but I'll run Adaware right after that, and that'll pick up another dozen tracking cookies that I delete. So what is going on? How come the first one isn't picking up what's
because,
whatever?
What we have said right along, and it's just like now we recommend, you know, Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes, and AVG.
Yes.
No one program does it all. They just haven't made it yet that does it thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of them will touch a little bit. Say, some will go in the registry and touch on the files. Some will go heavily into the files and touch lightly on the registry. So that's why we recommend more than one program when cleaning.
And there's a difference between checking for anti-spyware and checking for viruses. They're two different types of programs.
I understand that. And actually, that was in the other comment. One of my coworkers has both Malwarebytes on his machine and also the SpyBot.
Mm-hmm.
And he was showing me that he ran Malwarebytes, came up clean, did a update to the SpyBot program, and it picked up some kind of, marketing stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so the combination of the programs is needed to catch everything.
Yeah.
The problem is if I added, people get angry with me now that the Tangos take so long to run. If I added in every.
In fact, that was your question in the newspaper last week.
Yeah, it takes that long.
It takes
get
hours,
over it.
Sometimes days.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
And you got to keep running it until it's clean.
Would you recommend, just for safety's sake, to have SpyBot on your machine?
Yeah, I think they should all be on there and run all of them.
Just don't have all of them running down the tray.
Just because I may put them back.
Well, they don't have to be down in the tray constantly running all the time.
Right, right. You don't want them doing that.
Right. You have to remember once in a while, maybe each night before you go to bed, What you do is you start one of those programs, turn off the monitor. That way it doesn't take any of your computing time away. You wake up in the morning, you turn on that computer, go check your email, that program will be done by then.
And also, for example, during when you run AdAware, it'll ask you, do you want to use the quicker version or the thorough? Most of the time, would you not agree, most of the time the quicker scan will be sufficient?
I would do, the first time installing, I do a thorough. Anytime after that, do the quick.
Quicker. Unless you suspect an infection of some sort, then do the thorough version.
There's no universality here.
Yeah.
Correct.
One thing that we ought to do.
Don't use Windows.
Well, yes.
That's the universality.
Yeah, we have to remember 99.999% of these viruses are Windows viruses, not computer viruses. But one of the things we ought to do is put together a little tutorial on using the at command. And just like you can do a cron job on the Mac or on Linux. All righty.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy your Saturday.
Yep, you too.
Bye-bye.
We should put out a tutorial on how to let that run overnight while you're not computing so that you could, if you wanted to, check your machine every night and how to make that work. Anyway, we'll talk about that ourselves in the break. In the meantime, you'll have a chance to do whatever it is you do for the next couple of minutes. It's Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Ladies and gentlemen, y'all ready for the blues?
If you're ready for some blues, look no further than Sunday nights. I'm Greg Lefebvre, your host for Doc's Juke Joint. Every Sunday from 7 till 10, part of our 5 hours of blues on Sunday nights. On the Juke Joint, you'll hear new blues, classic blues, and our extensive music calendar. Dig the blues on Sunday nights on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is another National Wildlife Refuge Minute. In Wallkill River National Wildlife Refuge in northern New Jersey, that hammering sound could only be one thing, the pileated woodpecker in search of a meal. One of the most recognizable birds in all of nature, the pileated woodpecker's large size and red crest served as inspiration for one of America's most beloved cartoon characters, Woody Woodpecker. The holes pileated woodpeckers create are often big enough to become nesting areas for smaller birds. A forest full of pileated woodpeckers looking for lunch would sound like a drum line at a parade, and maintaining healthy forests in the wildlife refuge helps the beat go on. Every wildlife refuge is...
What do you love about the radio?
I just like the variety, because it can put you in different moods, and you don't know what to expect. I think my favorite part is you don't know what to expect, so I always get excited when a song is over, because I'm excited for what the next song is going to be.
New artist Caitlin Crosby loves radio.
Still have my heart. You still have my heart.
Discover Caitlin Crosby and other new artists where it's good to be heard. Radio. Always something new and fresh, always free. Go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The Pitside Room, Ship's Paradise, The Cotton Club, Shalimar, Jinx and Jones, Indigos, Ben Keaton's, The Oak Tree Lounge, Top of the Plaza, Round Towner, The Pine Grill, The Glass Onion. Those are places that we all love. But they're really not in the past. The doctor keeps them from being just a memory. Hi, I'm Paul Conley. Join me every Monday morning from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. following the Spectrum for Jazz Overnight on your member-supported 24-hour jazz station, Jazz 90.1 and Jazz901.org.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Now, I was thinking about this during the break. And even though my mental processes are a lot slower than...
I was going to say, did that cause a headache?
Yeah, exactly. A lot slower than they were 20 years ago. I think that's not a bad idea. One of the things that you can do under Windows is you can set things up to run at specific times of the day. And there are a couple of different ways to do that. I'm really not going to go into them now because they're a little more complex than just blah, blah, blah over the air. But... I may need to add those as part of the Windows Waltz so that if you leave your machine on every day. See, and you have to leave your machine on every day. Otherwise, they'll just run when you turn it on. So if you turn it off at night and it was supposed to run at 2 a.m., when you turn your machine on at 8 in the morning, it'll run, and then that disrupts everything you wanted to do. But if you leave your machine on 24/7, and a lot of people do.
I do.
If it's a desktop, that's fine. You can set these things so that, say, at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., or, and you can set one to run at 2 and one to run at 3 and one to run at 4, you know. Once you've done it live once, you know how long it takes. So if it takes 40 minutes, pad it to an hour, and you should be good, right? Mm-hmm. So you can set these things to run automatically, and I may add that information to the tango, to the waltz, actually, to the end of the waltz. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. So, yeah, that's an excellent point, and I may have to do that. All right. College students have long been known to protest against war, racism, and other social maladies. But now students,
this is a good one.
Yeah, now students at Santa Clara University are taking aim at what they see as a new form of injustice, allegedly poor cell phone reception. According to the Chronicle of Higher Education, students at the university have organized a campus-wide Call AT&T to Complain Day that encourages AT&T users to give the company an earful about allegedly poor reception in some Santa Clara dormitories. The event's chief organizer, Santa Clara Junior Kelsey Houlihan, told the Chronicle of Higher Education that between 200 and 300 students and faculty at the university have called AT&T to complain. The Chronicle also reports that AT&T actually tried to calm the storm by sending a representative out to the campus to talk with upset students. Additionally, the Chronicle says AT&T has for months been aware of coverage issues on campus and has been working with the university to improve reception. AT&T has taken a lot of grief from both competitors and iPhone users over the past year over the size of its 3G network. In response, the company has aggressively rolled out HSPA 7.2 technology that it says will significantly boost speeds on its GSM-based 3G network. The company is hoping that deploying its 3G network over stronger spectrum on the 850 megahertz band will solve some of the big capacity and propagation problems that have given iPhone users headaches in major markets such as New York and San Francisco. Santa Clara, which is located about 40 miles south of San Francisco, would logically figure to benefit from such upgrades. AT&T's overall network performance has also shown some distinct signs of improvement in recent months. A recent study conducted by PC World shows that AT&T now has the fastest average download speed on its 3G network of all four major U.S. carriers. Similarly, a study conducted late last year by performance monitoring startup Root Wireless also found that AT&T has the fastest average 3G download speeds. But while AT&T's 3G network performance has certainly improved, it is still vulnerable to the criticism that its 3G coverage does not extend far enough since it's primarily confined to major metropolitan areas and does not extend to most geographical areas in the United States. Our question to you, what's your favorite cell carrier and why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. For those of you who are listening outside the 585 area code, like in another country.
And did you hear the protest lawsuit this week that zombies have won the right to peaceably protest?
Huh?
Apparently.
Okay, seriously.
No.
Yeah,
in Minneapolis, there was a student protest in 2006, and they were dressed up as zombies.
Were they protesting breathing?
Yeah, really.
It was, I don't see the actual reason for the protest. But the police jumped them and roughed them up a little bit and threw them in jail. And
you want to be careful because if they bite you, you become a zombie.
Right, yeah. So they sued the Minneapolis police and the
U.S. God bless our police. Yep. They are very, very brave individuals.
The United States Court of Appeals sided with the zombies. And
that's not a phrase you're going to hear very often.
Yeah, and basically in the three-judge panel ruled 2-1 that police lacked probable cause to arrest the group. Who were wearing white powder, fake blood, and black around their eyes,
one
shuffling
thing,
around
if you,
like zombies.
If you're going to chase a zombie, you don't have to run very fast.
Right, yeah. Right. See, they arrested them for disorderly conduct. How do zombies do disorderly conduct? They're so slow.
It's kind of like a Brownian movement more
yeah.
than a disorderly conduct.
Yep.
All right.
So now the group is seeking damages from the police of at least $50,000 for each person arrested.
Yep.
This is drop.
Our tax dollars at work, folks.
Rock over on the IRC chat. What do we want? Brains. When do we want them? Brains.
I will post a link to that story in case anyone thinks I'm making it up.
Yeah.
It was not on The Onion.
You couldn't.
You don't. Yeah, right. You don't have to make this stuff up. This is America. And that's, I find that amusing. We had a rule on campus. We have a rule on campus, no firearms. This rule makes a lot of sense on a college campus, particularly at the end of the quarter.
Yeah.
All right?
I want an A.
But we got dinged, me and my department people. We spent a summer, our building was being renovated, so we were all together in a room. It was a big classroom. We took out all the chairs, and that was okay because, you know, we wanted the space for whatever. And we would have Nerf wars, Nerf gun wars. That and they counts. Came in and told us we couldn't have Nerf gun wars because no firearms are allowed on campus. And I thought to myself, really? Seriously? You're going to mistake a Glock for this big orange and red plastic thing?
What about rubber band guns?
No.
Yeah.
I had a rubber band
gun. You could put an eye out with
a six shooter, band six shooter.
I want the Gatling gun.
Yeah.
Yes.
But how do you define firearm? There's no fire involved in a Nerf gun.
They have, but now there is a continuing zombies versus humans game occurring on campus. And, of course, the humans carry Nerf guns.
Mm-hmm.
So the
they should carry machetes.
The no firearms. Yes. Thank God you're not really one of them in either camp. But they have now amended, apparently, the firearms rule so that Nerf guns, which are obviously Nerf guns, being giant yellow and red and green and blue plastic things, are okay.
Until the first criminal paints his real gun yellow and then sticks somebody up with it.
I don't like you anymore. I really
terrible. He always goes to the dark side.
Well, there was a case.
Come to the dark side. We have cookies.
Yeah. A school in the last week or so got shut down and evacuated because a kid brought, what was it? It wasn't a Nerf gun. Might have been a rubber band gun, something simple and innocuous, and it was mistaken for a real gun. Maybe a Wii, one of those, the Wiimote things.
Yeah.
Because my son takes his Wii games to the after school where they play Wii stuff.
Sure.
So they're in his book bag during school. So I got to make sure he doesn't take his gun cover for the Wiimote.
Remember when Wii games were something preschool kids played and no grammar or high school kid would be caught dead playing a Wii game?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the Wii games. What, it shoots and ladders? No, thank you. Now it's like, I got to play the Wii game. Mm-hmm. All right. Our next caller is Rich. Where are you calling from, Rich?
Hey, Nick, it's me, Richmond.
Hello,
from
Richmond.
Rochester.
Yes, when you're not in Canada. I'm Peachy, my friend. How are you?
All right. Hey, I was listening to you talking about the security tango. You know what I do before I run that stuff? I use CClean and make sure all my temp files and my registry is nice and clean, because then it runs. All those other things run a little shorter because they don't have to go through all those files.
Good point. Clean all your cache files out, because that's where a lot of the spyware hides. System restore points, too. They hide in there.
Yeah, and you can
which is in the tango to turn off your system restore before you run the program.
Right.
But people miss that step.
Yeah. You can automate the CCleaner, too.
Yeah.
So that could be part of the schedule. So that, you know, the gentleman earlier was talking about how long his run. A lot of times I find it's because you got 47 billion temp files that you've been, you know, because you haven't cleaned out your temp files, say, in a month.
Yeah.
Well, the tango actually tells you to do that, but I know a lot of people don't run every step.
Right, right.
But, yeah, you're absolutely right. CCleaner is an excellent thing to run before you...
Another one that's out there...
No, give me a pen.
Nope. Another program that's out there is ATF Cleaner.
ATF?
ATF Cleaner. And that goes through and cleans out in the user a lot of your cookies and internet temp files and all that other. It's a cool
Well, even the Windows Disk Cleanup command can do some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, one more question.
It's there.
Are you guys seeing problems with Windows 7 sharing on networks of XP?
No.
Absolutely.
I have with Macs trying to get into a Windows 7 shares. They changed something on SMB?
Yeah.
Yeah, they made it. I know they made it SMB too, and there's some things that you can do so that it can share. But I had a heck of a time trying to share a Windows 7 drive with an XP machine.
Oh, it might be that home network thing.
Yep, that's what I was about to say. The you have to make sure they're on the same network by name.
Right.
And XP used to call it home.
Right.
And Windows 7 calls it used to call it MS Home, and Windows 7 called it
Windows 95, 98 called it Work Group.
Work Group.
Right, right.
So, if,
so what does Seven call it now?
I think
something
it's
different.
Well,
yet.
It's a home group. No, they call it home group.
Home group.
So it is something different. Yes.
Yeah.
So
and, yes. And that home group, you can eliminate that, and because we just had to reinstall because I crashed one of my machines.
Uh-huh.
Having fun. Because I wanted to go to 64-bit anyways. And, yeah, I had to turn off that home group. You know, you got to work your way down in, and you can turn off that home group. And then, yep, it showed all my computers. My server got locked onto that. And any of the other computers now, because I shared the drive on this Windows 7 machine, and it's seeing it and playing with it very nicely.
And if it's Enterprise, it won't see it anyway, because Enterprise won't talk to home.
Really?
Or actually the other way around, home won't talk to Enterprise.
Not even through simple file sharing?
It might through simple file sharing, but
because
the
you
whole
can't
idea
join a
behind home is that you can't connect to a domain.
Right.
But I don't want to connect to a domain. I just want to connect to the file
sharing.
Right.
You may be able to connect to another machine, but if that machine's on a network that is part of a domain, you won't be able to connect to
you
it.
Know,
are you trying to use the network browser, or are you typing the address?
No, I was using the network browser.
That has always been a problem. If you go to start, run, and type the address, it's /backslash. You can use the name of the other computer, or it's most effective to type the IP address of the other computer,
/.
SharePoint on the other computer. That should almost always get you in.
Right. Okay.
And you have to have the same login on both machines.
Right. I did that. I made sure I had the same.
Why can't
user,
it ask you for the username
sure
and password?
I had the same password on both machines. It was a nightmare. It just like, and I gave up. I couldn't even get this stupid thing to work.
Yep.
One last question.
Yeah.
I have a Pure Vista machine. It was a Virgin machine. I installed Vista on it. Everything on the Vista machine runs good. Has any of you guys did an upgrade from a good Vista machine like that to 7? And has all the programs worked?
Well, most of the programs that won't work now work on Windows 7. But the answer to your question is no. I would still do a clean install on Windows 7 because Vista, you know.
That depends on how much time you have. If
still
you do
has
the
its quirks, though, and some of the stuff that it won't.
If you do the upgrade.
I got over 50 programs on the machine. Yeah. It's like, oh, my God. It's just a nightmare.
If you do the upgrade install and it doesn't work, then you get to do a clean install anyway. So you win, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Give it a shot. You know, I mean, you know, something venture, something gain. You know, if you wind up doing it, I haven't had the chance to do it yet. But because most of my stuff that I've been doing for folks is going from Windows XP up to Windows 7.
And that's got to be a clean install, right?
Yeah, and that's a clean install. But, you know, hey, give it a shot. I mean, you might win out on this one. They say it's very simple and that, and I'd like to hear back on it.
I'll image the machine with a Cronus first before I do that. So if it doesn't work, I just can
go back to
where it was.
Then,
cover your butt.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
Take it easy.
All right, my friend, keep smiling. I didn't see him at market today because I was there for a fairly short time and left early. I'm very excited. My daughter.
Share the news.
Won the School of the Arts Shakespeare competition, and today I'm blasting out here at exactly 2:00 because she is participating in the citywide competition today. So I had to drop her off there, and so market was short, and I got her there. And
congrats
here,
to her.
Blah, 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 blah,
tell
blah,
her
blah.
Break a leg.
Absolutely. So she's very excited. It starts at 2:00. If she's not in the first, there's like 10 people. So if she's not in the first half of the group, I'll get there in time to see her. So it is my hope she's in the latter half.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Depends if they do it alphabetically.
Right. I don't know what, you know, they draw things out of a hat or whatever. But if any of the people who are influencing the competition are listening, I'm not asking you to let her win. I'm just asking you to let her be in the latter half so I'll be able to watch her. That's all I ask. I know she'll win on her own because she's exceptional. So I'm very excited about that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back. It's the hour break. If you're on the line, and I think there's at least one person on the line, please hold on. We will get to you right after the break. But if you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not, because it's a real easy thing to do. All you do is call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or 1-800-790-0415. You can find those numbers at soundbites.org, bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. or at jazz901.org. It's real easy to get online and join us there. We're on Ustream. We're on FNET. We're streaming live off of the Jazz 901 website. We're on Twitter. Cheese and crackers, if you can't find us, you're not looking. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
In celebration of Black History Month 2010, Jazz 90.1 proudly salutes African-American jazz musicians. Throughout the month of February, we will present biographical vignettes of great jazz and blues artists like Alan Toussaint, John Coltrane, Wynton Marsalis, Nancy Wilson, and Roy Hargrove. Be listening each weekday at 7:40 a.m., 12:40, 4:40, and 8:40 p.m. when Jazz 90.1 will honor a different African-American jazz musician. For a complete listing of artists featured, visit jazz901.org. African-American jazz vignettes are presented as a public service by Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
If you've made home improvements by adding energy-efficient insulation, windows, and heating and cooling systems, you can claim 30% of the cost, up to $1,500 combined for 2009 and 2010. And if you haven't made any improvements in 2009, you can still make them through 2010 and claim them on next year's return. A second credit is available for alternative energy equipment like solar electric systems and geothermal heat pumps, but they have to be certified. A public service message from the New York State Society of Certified Public Accountants.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno, inviting you to a musical party this and every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. Our guests may include Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, or who knows, maybe even Count Basie or Joe Williams, Bobby Darin. Lady Ella herself could stop by. It's a musical celebration every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. That's Sundays at 12 noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Listeners who listen on a regular basis may want to support Jazz 90.1 that way too. If your budget is organized around monthly expenses, it may be more convenient to support Jazz 90.1 monthly as well. For example, a pledge of $10 a month would mean $120 a year in support. The payment amount you choose is automatically made each month directly from your credit or debit card. You can stop the monthly payment at any time, and we confirm each payment by email. For more information about the Jazz 90.1 monthly gift option, call 966-2660 or visit us online at www.jazz901.org. With the monthly gift option, it's easier than ever for you to become a member of Jazz 90.1.
There we go. Taxes done and on their way.
I hope you checked your math.
Yep.
Remember your W-2s?
I'm not making that mistake again. I even included my Social Security number this time.
Every year, millions of people make common errors on their taxes that cost them time and money. Using eFile prevents many of these problems. Visit IRS.gov for more tips to help you do your taxes right.
Now, you did sign your return, right?
Oh!
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we're going to go right to the phones because poor Sheila's been waiting a whole, what, 3 minutes, 4 minutes?
Four minutes.
Sheila, welcome. Where are you calling from?
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Yes, I wanted to thank Dave Enright for helping me with a new computer this week. He was very patient and helpful and gentle, and I really appreciated it. It's running great. and I'm working out little wrinkles by using the internet to find the answers.
Yay!
Cool.
That's our secret. We're here Googling the answer when someone calls a
question.
Don't tell them. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have leaked that out.
To say thank you.
I appreciate
thank you
that
so
show.
Much, Sheila.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, that was easy. Those are the kind of calls we like. Just somebody's got something nice to say, and then they hang up. We like those.
Usually we don't see people until there's problems, and they hate us.
Well, that's why I still use that tagline, on all my emails. The only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And, because there are no dumb questions, you just got to ask it. And then,
I got to be honest with you, that's not true. I've heard some exceptionally dumb questions, but most of them are not about computers.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think I'll give you that one. If you're talking about computers, most of the questions are not dumb.
What is my,
exactly. But I've heard some exceptionally stupid questions in my time.
Oh, wait till the rant.
I have a friend who always starts out a question with, can I ask you a stupid question? And my answer to him immediately is always, yes, and history will bear me out.
You just did?
Good one. I like that.
Every time he gets angry.
So that's why you do it.
And that's why I do it.
Oh, duh.
He knows that. We're good friends. I can do that to him. He's always going, shut up and let me ask it. Okay. If you just asked the questions, we wouldn't have lost those 40 seconds out of our lives.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, that's we take every question. But it is rare, I think, and this is true for all of us. It's considering the number of things we do for people and the number of questions we ask and the number of people we help, it is unfortunately rare that anyone actually says thank you. I mean, if they're right there, they'll say thank you for fixing my machine or whatever. Yeah. But if it's an email thing or, it goes out in the newsletter, people never write in and say, thank you, you answered.
No, just go ahead
rare.
And answer.
It happens, and I treasure those, but it's rare.
No, it is, and I really appreciate it because, like you say, it's not said often. And then, when you do, hear from an occasional person, it just reassures you, well, you're on the right track, you're doing it right, just keep it up because, hopefully the rest of the folks, even though they don't say it, they're appreciating, and just like what we do here, folks will sit there and call in constantly. Great show, and enjoy listening to you guys. Sometimes the biggest thing I always get is I don't understand half of it, but you're darn entertaining.
Yeah, I get people who say I don't understand. I don't even have a computer, but I love to listen. And God bless those folks because we love them to listen. All right, they're not going to show up on the Ustream, of course, or on the live audio stream, but they're there, and that's what counts. That's what we love to hear. All right, Microsoft has won court approval to shut down a global network of computers, which it says is responsible for more than 1.5 billion spam messages every day. A U.S. judge granted the firm's request to shut down 277 internet domains, which it said were used to command and control the so-called Wallodak botnet. A botnet is a network of infected computers under the control of hackers. The firm said that closing the domains would mean that up to 900,000 PCs would stop receiving orders to send out spam. A prominent security researcher said he doubts Microsoft's takedown of the Wallodak botnet would have any impact on spam levels, as the company claimed. Wallodak just is not a hugely prolific spammer, said Joe Stewart. I can't talk today. Director of Malware Analysis at SecureWorks and a noted botnet researcher. So I don't think it's going to affect spam volume. What it does do lately, what it's used for is to install rogue antivirus software. So it's not going to kill spam, but it should cut down on the amount of antivirus people get. The UK-based anti-spam service Spamhouse echoed Stewart. If Microsoft's takedown did affect spam, we haven't noticed, said Richard Cox, chief information officer at Spamhouse. Like Stewart, Cox also dismissed Wallodak's threat as a spam engine. Wallodak is not a high threat. It's less than 1% of the spam traffic, Cox said. What we're worried about is Zeus, which is a far more damaging botnet, which is creating a substantial amount of spam. So what we see here is that Wallodak got taken down by Microsoft. Microsoft said it was against spam, and the spam people are saying, no, it's not. It's not about spam at all. It's about Trojans. And there, again, we now see the difference. We talked earlier about some programs deal with spam, some programs deal with Trojans, some programs deal with antivirus. They're three distinct things, and although Microsoft used the wrong word, they did get 60,000 machines away from that botnet, still leaving 30,000 that they're working on getting. So,
there was a story last year about a spam king got arrested and his service shut down.
Sure.
And
Spamford Wallace.
Yeah,
excuse me.
Yeah.
Hamford Wallace.
And the spam count dropped like 80% overnight.
Yep.
And now it's no doubt.
Well, then the next day it was back up 120%.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like these guys only have one domain they're counting on for this stuff. Anyway, have you seen a decrease, an increase, no change in spam? Who knows? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Joe did. Where are you calling from, Joe?
Okay, Rochester.
Okay, Rochester.
Question.
So I typed in okay, Rochester.
Is that south of Utica?
Yeah. It's in Oklahoma.
Oh.
But they call it okay, Rochester.
Oh, right.
North of Lake Wobegon.
Yeah. You got it. Where men are men and women are women and children are and strong.
You say real nervous.
Strong. Women are, I don't remember, and children are above average. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. What is the most convenient way to write over all of the deleted but still obviously, you know, content-filled deleted files on a complete hard drive?
There's Kill Disk. That will
do. Without deleting the rest of the files?
Yeah, without deleting. I just want to delete the ones that are kind of like free space, marked as free space, but clearly can be recovered perhaps if somebody knows how to do it.
Yeah, because there was Derek's Bootnuke. But that erases the entire hard drive security.
Right, so does Kill Disk.
There are programs that...
Norton had a product, I don't know if they did still do, but way back when they used to have a program that would sit there and totally erase any files that were erased on a hard drive. But
yeah, the Mac has that feature built into Disk Utility. There's also a secure empty trash that obliterates the file as you delete it.
Mm-hmm.
But what about Windows?
Cleaner might do that, correct?
Hmm?
PC Cleaner might completely obliterate any...
No. That just deletes there's a specific Trojan.
If
that
you're that
for.
Worried about it, the best thing to do is just format the whole hard drive. Start fresh.
There is a program called Easy Cleaner. There's another one called Prevent Restore. I don't know anything about either one of them, but they exist. I have not used them.
Hmm.
And so I can't promise you anything one way or the other about those. There's also a program that comes with Windows called Cypher.exe, which is actually designed to encrypt and decrypt data on the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people who have used it, and apparently successfully, they say, delete the data in a deallocated sector. So I'm not entirely certain how that works, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a program called sdelete.exe that will securely delete a file so that you have to do that ahead of time.
Yeah, I was anxious just to kind of, okay, all the space that's been out there for several years now. I have no idea, of course.
Right, so some of them are fairly... The other thing, there was a file called File Shredder. File Shredder was one. And that's actually at fileshredder.org. Again, I've not used any of these.
Sure.
So I'm not going to promise you. If I would download it and then do a complete security tango on my machine before I ran it.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime we say we haven't run these ourselves, that's an important thing to do. But
they come with no guarantee from us.
It's free. It's under the GNU license. That does not mean it's open source. It does mean you don't have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't tell you what's in it. But
It looks like it's securely
GNU. Is that sort of like I can row? Can you?
GNU? Yeah. What's GNU? I don't know. What's GNU with you? But that's File Shredder. Mm-hmm. There's also Archicrypt, however they want to pronounce that. That's a fairly low price, and it does even better, apparently. If you want to clean the whole volume, of course, there's Kill Disk and Data Cleaner and a couple of others. So, but for that, give File Shredder a try. Take a look at it. Find some reviews online. Google File Shredder and read some reviews. And if you find that it's something you're interested in, there you go.
All right. Well, I do appreciate that.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
Have a good day, guys.
You too. Keep smiling. That's one of the problems that we have here is that we don't run everything that's out there. There's millions and millions of programs, many of which are actually exceptionally good. We just don't run them all. That's just the way that works.
And actually, that brings up something, too, for what was the earlier call going to Joanne, who's going to Ireland and Europe. Bon Viver pointed out in our chat room that AAA sells the voltage adapters in their stores.
So, oh, of course they would.
And there's a AAA office in Greece in that plaza over there.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Okay, good.
I can see it in my mind, that's but I don't remember good. What else is in that plaza.
All you need
it's
to
the
do
one
is,
Taco Bell is.
Is find your nearest AAA store. That's Joanne, who's going to Ireland. Look, if you can get to Ireland and England and Europe, you ought to be able to find the nearest AAA store. Nearest AAA place, and they have a store in there where you can buy that multi-kit. And I'll bet you there's somebody there who can tell you, at least for the more common devices, whether right. the device itself is okay or you need to buy something. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich. Where are you calling from, Rich?
Hey, Nick, it's me again.
Oh, hi, Richmond.
Yeah, that guy, Ken, C Cleaner, they do have a secure wipe where they wipe over, they go and do the Department of this defense levels, and then they do the Gutman levels.
Oh, nice.
Of deletes. So you can do like a overwrite seven times for the NSA, and the Gutman is 35 passes over the same space. And it will also wipe free space on the drive, too. So you can use CCleaner. It's just going to take a long time it does those settings.
Without deleting existing files, just deletes
it
the
will
free
go,
space.
Yeah, that's all it'll do is just delete the files that it deleted twice, how many times you set it, and then it will go to that free space.
Now, is that a paid version?
Huh?
Is that a paid version?
No, it's been around since 2.2.
Donation.
If you go into
acceptable.
Settings, you can set it.
No, I just was wondering whether, you know, sometimes they have a free version that'll have limited use versus, you know, a paid version.
No, CCleaner is just, it's part of the settings. Okay. And I ran it one time. It took a long time to run it.
Yeah, if you're doing Gutman level and or DoD level, it's going to take a while because it overwrites and then overwrites again and then overwrites that.
I tried a 35 wipe on a hard drive once and gave up after a week. Because it was still going.
it gives you, the DoD is three passes, so that's the one I use if I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And then it does go through, and it will go also and go through the free space, and it'll also go and clean up the MFT space, the indexes in MFT for you.
Nice.
If you CCleaner should do what he wants done.
Excellent.
I've had some clients that, you know, want me to take care of their old hard drive. It might be a small, say, 40-gig hard drive. And they're worried about getting, you know, the data getting off of it. I found a perfect, program to do it. It's called a 20-pound sludge.
Yeah,
and I've got it out on the, I've got this mat out in the front of the shop, and I take this 20-pound sludge hammer, and I hit it three spots, turns it into a great maraca.
You know, there's a guy. There's a guy somewhere. I believe it's in Arizona, somewhere in the Midwest. Who will actually let you bring electronics to his shooting range.
Gonna blow them up?
And shoot them.
I'm there.
I'm so there.
Oh, they
I am so there. I would save stuff for a year.
A few thousand ME. A few ME CDs.
Come to the dark side. We have cookies. Yeah.
With some C4. Boom.
Okay, so, guys, I'm leaving on that time.
All right, thanks, Richmond.
Bye-bye.
I love it when people call and give us...
Oh, they would be so cool. Go up there and blow up all the versions of ME and, you know, Vista. Ooh, that would be so cool.
So, you know, this is a very technological town. So any one of the folks in town who runs a shooting range, this is something you might think about. Now, you got to have a fairly contained alleyway so that you can clean it up easily because there's going to be a lot of electronic bits and pieces floating around. But I'm telling you, I'll guarantee you, you'd make some money at that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'd go. I'd take my shotgun down. Boom, boom, boom.
That keyboard and mouse that was giving you problems ain't giving you problems anymore. Boom.
Every one of the, like, half a dozen dead freaking iPods I have that Apple won't fix, nobody can fix, they're just dead. Oh, well, get over it and buy a new one. Bang, 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 bang. And go back to my Sansa that works every single day. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is.
I've told you about iPod Rescue, haven't I?
No.
No. They can repair some iPods. They can repair any iPod, but they'll give you an estimate on how much it's going to cost to repair.
Yeah.
Hard drives are kind of expensive to replace. Screens are a little expensive. Logic boards are terrible. But they can usually fix it for about $100.
Or I can wait for Woot to give me a Sansa for $29.95. Yeah. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. You are listening to the longest-running, or you may be watching it if you're on Ustream, to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. We are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1, and that's going to be an important thing to remember coming up real soon. We are member-supported.
Hey, I got a little gal down in New Orleans, boy, cooking ham hocks and collard greens. Hey, keep on chugging, mama, chugging my blues away. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Mike Cuthbert, host of AARP's Primetime Radio. Barry Yeoman, contributing editor of AARP, the magazine, went down south recently and found a story that kept on growing. It was the story of the blues. He found chapters of the story in various places, but more important than the locations were the people he met along the way. They are, in some cases, the last remaining custodians of a vital American musical tradition. Barry also met a man who's trying to preserve the music and the men and women who sing it. We call our program Truckin' the Blues Away, and it'll be heard right here.
Hear Truckin' My Blues Away on Sunday, February 28th at 6 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 apparel is available online. Whether it's a long or short sleeve t-shirt, half-zip fleece, hooded sweatshirt, or baseball cap that you're looking for, you'll find it at the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org.
Here's another I Love New York travel tip.
Art lovers, step out of the cold and into one of the fascinating exhibitions taking place now in New York State. In Glens Falls, see a testament to the enduring legacy of Impressionist painting in American art at the Hyde Museum exhibition, American Impressionist Landscapes from the Thomas Clark Collection. In Manhattan, the Metropolitan Museum of Art's first ever exhibition, dedicated to Agnolo Bronzino, features nearly all of the known drawings by or attributed to this leading Italian Mannerist artist. And at the Corning Museum of Glass, Tiffany Treasures showcases nearly 60 hand-wrought pieces designed by artist Louis Comfort Tiffany.
For more information or to learn about other New York State travel opportunities, visit the I Love New York website at iloveny.com.
World-class art. Another reason I love New York.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Havana Mo's, located at 125 East Avenue in the East End. One of the only legal smoking bars in the city, Havana Mo's features the East End Jazz Boys live every Saturday night from 9:30 to 2 a.m. For more information, you can call 325-1030.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Listeners who listen on a regular basis may want to support Jazz 90.1 that way, too. If your budget is organized around monthly expenses, it may be more convenient to support Jazz 90.1 monthly as well. For example, a pledge of $10 a month would mean $120 a year in support. The payment amount you choose is automatically made each month directly from your credit or debit card. You can stop the monthly payment at any time, and we confirm each payment by email. For more information about the Jazz 90.1 monthly gift option, call 966-2660 or visit us online at www.jazz901.org. With the monthly gift option, it's easier than ever for you to become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion, 10 p.m., right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
No, I'm listening to the music. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, we're just going to go right to the phone. We got John on the line. Welcome, John. Where are you calling from?
Hilton.
Hilton, New York, and what's your question?
It's a comment on overwriting deleted programs.
Yep.
the program you talk a lot about Revo as an evidence remover, which works well but takes several hours to overwrite. Also, as mentioned, CC Cleaner, you can set it for a simple overwrite to delete all your, you know, day-to-day deletes and temporary files and so forth. And there's another program I use called Eraser. I don't know if you mentioned that or not. That works quite well. It gives you different levels of overwrite all the way up to the Department of Defense.
Cool.
So
nice.
But yeah. I was wondering if you ever used the evidence remover on Revo.
No, I can't say that I have.
Well, that works well, but again, it takes.
And if you want a thorough job, it's going to take some time. I mean, there is nothing that's going to.
Or we just use this big giant mother degausser we've got at RIT. Just whoom, and it's done. You're done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's several programs that claim to have evidence removers, and that just bugs me that they name them that.
Yeah, right.
So you're doing something illegal on your computer and you want to remove the evidence.
Well, this is for drives we take out of machines when we trash them. Yeah. Listen, folks, as you buy new machines and you're going to trash the old ones, or even if you're going to give them to somebody else, you really, really, really need to be aware that leaving anything on your hard drive, even erased, could lead you to problems. If you've kept any kind of information like your passwords or your credit card numbers or any of that frou-frou on there, it can be a real problem.
There's countless.
My suggestion is, if you're giving it to somebody else, you know, because you love them or like them or whatever it is, buy them a hard drive. They aren't that expensive anymore. Buy them a brand new hard drive. They'll usually come with a version of Windows nowadays, so you can, you know, that's all legit now, and then you don't even have to run into that problem. But on the other hand, if you're going to throw the thing away, take the drive out first. I take the drives out, and then I use them in other machines as secondary or tertiary drives or whatever.
Or just pile it up in the closet.
Or just pile them up in the closet. I got a bunch of those. Yeah. Or I take a drill to them.
Yeah, there's countless stories all over the internet of people who have bought used computers or used hard drives.
Oh, yeah, and they found
and they're full of data, yeah.
Yep.
Your computer dies, and you know, you end up buying a new one. You recycle that one or set it out in front of the house. Someone with better tools might fix your computer. We hear those stories all the time, too. And all your data is still there. So even if you're going to throw the computer away or recycle the computer, keep your hard drive.
Well, even if
it's supposed to be dead.
Even the machine blows up, you can take the hard drive out, put it on another test bench, and there are all the files, documents and everything else. If I go into the QuickBooks folder, oh, there's QuickBooks.
Yep, and you really don't want somebody else getting that information. So be very, very careful what you do with your old machines. If you're going to put them out to the curb, take the drives out and trash those drives. Take him over to Dave's and borrow his sledgehammer.
Oh, we have
to charge you a buck a swing. That and believe me when I tell you that's cheap.
Good therapy.
It's great therapy.
Yeah, well, I used to donate computers to certain organizations, and I would find all sorts of things on these computers that people thought they got rid of because they deleted them. But in any case, this Revo program has basically everything you need on it, other than uninstaller.
We've been recommending it as an uninstaller, but looks like it does a whole lot more.
Yep.
Yeah, so it may be called evidence remover. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm removing something illegal.
It just
works. You know.
Just because they assume you're a thief or something else, you doesn't mean you are.
Guilty until proven
innocent.
All right,
excellent. Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Have fun. Yeah, you do have to be fairly careful of that stuff because really leaving any of those things. You know, you give your machine to Dave or Steve or to me or to somebody like John who's just on the line, somebody, you know, who ends up being entirely scrupulous about these things. That's one thing, but doggone it, you don't know who's going to end up with that machine eventually. So you want to be very careful of those things. Our next caller is...
Like I say, we sell a lot of computers on consignment. When our customers buy a new computer, they'll often have us sell the old one, and that's our biggest problem. Is, well, we need your disks back so we can erase the computer and reinstall the original software. Well,
I can't find them.
Can't find those disks. Well, that makes it really hard to sell.
We can
sell it with an empty hard drive, but then no one can find disks for an old computer.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a real problem. All right, our next caller is Tom. Where are you calling from, Tom?
Calling from Penfield.
Penfield, and what can we do for you?
Well, I'm an Ubuntu user since Christmas. I've been using it almost exclusively. And you were talking earlier today about some of the Security Tango.
Yep.
And specifically, I'd like to ask a couple questions about Ubuntu Linux and the dance.
Sure.
I guess the Linux Lumbata.
Sure.
It's called.
Isn't that an embarrassing thing to actually have to say?
Lumbata?
I admit it. Linux Lumbata. It's better than the Mac Arena.
Well, it's better than lobotomy.
There is that.
For sure.
Go ahead. What's your question?
I have a Clam TK because I have Ubuntu and I have that loaded. I run it a few times. And I usually run it in my home directory. But I noticed that you said on step two, should run it once in a while in the slash directory.
Yep.
That's like the root directory.
Yes.
And, you know, I've been using Ubuntu, but, I mean, some of the things are still a mystery to me. I don't really know where that one is. Can you tell me how to find that directory?
Sure. When you run Clam TK, what that does is it's a graphical user interface for the Clam antivirus, right?
Yeah.
So you can actually just run Clam TK from a command line. So you open up the command line, right?
Well, I actually run it from a window virus scanner.
Well, all right, you can do that too.
Yeah.
But let me be thorough here.
Okay.
If you run it from a command line, you just type Clam TK space slash, and that's the key with the question mark on it. But don't shift it.
Okay.
If you run it from the GUI front end, in the space where it says what directory do you want, you put that slash. The slash universally says the entire hard drive. Now, here's where the problem comes in. In order to run it on the entire hard drive, you have to be the root user.
Right.
Which is why I say you run it from the command line, because what you do is, at the command line, you don't just say clam tk space slash. You say sudo S-U-D-O.
Right.
For super user do.
Then that's a space after that.
Space, clam TK, space slash.
All
the
right.
system will come back and ask you for your password.
Right.
You type that in, and then it says, okay, you're legitimately the super user. Go for it.
Right.
And then it will let you run that on your entire machine, and that's really the best. It'll then start up the clam TK program. Right, but it's now running as root.
So that's not available from the GUI window, is what you're saying.
It is, but you have to then run the GUI as root.
All right, okay.
Which is dangerous to log in as root, because you might forget to log out as root. And
well, that's a real problem, yes.
Yeah.
So you're saying the safest way to do it is going through the window?
No, the safest way to do it is from the command line.
The command line, okay.
Right. And in fact, instead of clam TK, you should probably just use clam scan, which is the same program,
okay,
only without the front end. And then you can open up a terminal window, type sudo space clam scan space slash,
right,
type in your password, hit enter, and let it run in the background, and then go to another window or just minimize the terminal and let it run in the background.
Okay.
And then it's not even in your way. You don't even have to worry about it. And then every once in a while, I'll go take a look, and when it's done, it's done.
It doesn't really take long when I run it from the home.
Right, because you're only looking at the stuff in your home directory, and unless you've got millions of video or audio files or whatever, it doesn't take very long.
Okay. Now the next step is the firewall, and you said it's called IP tables.
Yeah,
runs
and
automatically.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about
so
it.
So I've got Ubuntu, I don't have to worry about it.
You do not have to worry about it.
What about the rootkits? It says install CHK rootkit, RK Hunter, and hide.
Yeah.
I looked for those, but I couldn't find them in the Ubuntu software.
Both RK Hunter and Check Rootkit are there. Hold on a second. I'm just looking that up right now. Oh, yeah, perhaps it should be search RK Hunter, not just RK Hunter. There you go. RK Hunter is there. Unhide is there. It's not hide. I actually answered that question earlier today. It's unhide.
Okay.
And I have to write that down or I'm not going to fix
it. So can I get to those through the Ubuntu Software Center?
Yes. You have to have under System Administration, Software Sources. Yeah. So if you click on the system thing and go to administration and software sources.
I see it. Okay.
It'll ask you for your password, which you type in. And I just typed it in while I was talking and didn't say it out loud. So I'm kind of pleased with myself, actually.
And you didn't type what you were saying.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly right. Scary. So what you need to do is under Ubuntu software, make sure all of that stuff is checked. The main, the universe, the restricted, and the multiverse, because I can't remember which one it's in, but it's in one of those four.
All right.
So make
sure
you
do that.
But
they all have to be checked?
They should all be checked. And then you have to, it'll probably tell you you have to download all the indices and let it do that. That takes a minute. And then you can install from the command line. And I think I talk about there. Yeah, you have to install, check rootkit using your favorite package manager. So you then go back to system administration and synaptic package manager and search for check rootkit. RK Hunter, and it's unhide, and I will fix that.
Unhide, okay. And then you've got automate things. I don't take any more of your time on that because I'll just try that out later on. I wanted to get, because I was having a little bit of trouble here with the first few steps.
Right.
So I'll do that later, but I'm really enjoying the fact that I can not have to worry so much about maintenance on the system like I did on my Windows machine. It's really frees me up to do actual computing work, and I really appreciate that.
It's nice to spend more time computing than in fixing your computer, isn't it?
It is. It's like kind of like having a car that breaks down every 100 miles, you know.
I've been there, done that.
This one goes 1,000 anyways.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, I'm delighted that you're happy with Ubuntu, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to clarify the Linux Lambada.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Yeah, we hear that a lot from in the Mac world from our IT friends who fight with Windows machines all day long, and then when they go home, they have a Mac because they want it to work.
Exactly. That's why I have a Linux. Yep. I have a Linux machine at work. I don't want to play.
Yep.
I don't want to play. I need to get work done.
Yeah, and don't fight with the computer all the time. It just works.
Right. Exactly right. All right. Our next caller is Lynn. Where are you calling from, Lynn?
Clymer.
Where?
Clymer.
Clymer, New York.
Correct. Reason I was calling, I was wondering if you guys could tell me, I own a copy of SpinRite. And I have 3 or 4 drives I would like to run it on, as well as my machines, which I have run on some of them already. But I have no idea how to point it to a drive plugged in by a USB.
You can't. It has to be an IDE drive plugged into either the SATA port or a PETA port.
Steve Gibson would argue with you.
Really? Because
I've
been trying
him
to
say
do
so on Security Now.
I've been trying to do it with my Mac.
No wonder I can't figure out anything.
I've been trying to do it with my Mac running Windows, and it won't see a USB drive. It keeps telling me it wants a IDE drive, because you're booting into FreeDOS running basically at the very core of the OS. You write all the stuff in assembler,
mm-hmm.
And I don't think there is USB driver.
No, it says
we're frantically Googling.
It says USB right on the site. Provides interaction. It can also be used with any other type of drive that can be made visible to DOS through an addition of controller BIOS or add-on DOS drivers.
So what's that mean?
You need to load a USB hard drive driver into the FreeDOS image.
In other words, I have to burn another copy and then run it from the disk, or do I run it right off from the machine?
You have to install a driver into DOS and then burn that as an image.
Okay. Then I got to find the driver.
Right. And my guess is drivers are going to be different for... Well, if it's the USB mass storage driver, that's a generic driver for USB drives. I'm a little surprised it's not built in.
Yeah,
of course, well, licensing issues. He probably doesn't want to have to license it. So
yeah. Oh, yeah, that's why. Because I was wondering the same thing, but, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Well, so, yeah, on their FAQ page, the question is, SpinRite compatible with USB and FireWire drives? And the best answer to this is a firm maybe. So if you add a USB driver, the USB mass storage driver, to your SpinRite disk, if it's a floppy disk, you can write to it. If it's a CD, you got to rebuild the image. So you have to install a USB mass storage driver for FreeDOS. That's got to be tricky to find.
Yeah, exactly. He says it's doable, but he doesn't say how.
So it's usually easier to pop the cover off the computer and hang the drive onto an IDE port or SATA port. Or it's what's convenient now is that a lot of computers will have an external SATA connector. And you can plug in your SATA hard drives without needing to pull the cover off and finding a cable on the inside.
Yeah. Well, that part doesn't bother me. In fact, that's the part of computing that I find fun.
Yeah.
My other question, see you now.
Oh, hold on. Stay on the line. We got to take a break. So you stay on the line, and we will be back with you when we come back. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. Lynn is on the line, and we'll be talking to him when we come back right here on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported. Yes, I said member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
You can only reach certain people through things like Facebook and MySpace. So for radio, it's great because it pushes us up to a new level and really just opens up opportunities for us that we didn't have before.
New artists like These Green Eyes, reaching new audiences every day where it all happens. Radio. To learn more, go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Have you been wanting a Jazz 90.1 long or short sleeve t-shirt, half zip fleece, or hooded sweatshirt? The dark navy color with white logo is good looking and tasteful. And you can find them all at the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org. Wearing Jazz 90.1 apparel makes it easy to let the world know that jazz is your music and Jazz 90.1 is your station for jazz. There's also a navy Jazz 90.1 baseball cap to complete the look. You know, you might find just exactly what you want when you check out the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org.
Hi, this is Tom Castronova. Please allow me to refresh your memory. It used to be on Mondays from 6 to 9 when I started on this station. Then I moved to Tuesdays and did this thing called Tuesdays with the Two Toms, and we featured Louis Armstrong music. Then I moved back to Monday from 6 to 9. Now I'm back on Tuesday. You got all that? So please, join me Tuesdays from 6 to 9 p.m. right here on member-supported Jazz Radio in Rochester, Jazz 90.1.
Hi, I'm Michelle Obama. The images from Haiti are heartbreaking. Homes, hospitals, and schools destroyed. Families searching for loved ones. Parents trying to feed their children. We can help the American Red Cross as it delivers the food, water, and medicine that can save lives. The people of Haiti are struggling to survive. Please visit redcross.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to help today. Brought to you by the American Red Cross and the Ad Council.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Listeners who listen on a regular basis may want to support Jazz 90.1 that way too. If your budget is organized around monthly expenses, it may be more convenient to support Jazz 90.1 monthly as well. For example, a pledge of $10 a month would mean $120 a year in support. The payment amount you choose is automatically made each month directly from your credit or debit card. You can stop the monthly payment at any time, and we confirm each payment by email. For more information about the Jazz 90.1 monthly gift option, call 966-2660 or visit us online at www.jazz901.org. With the monthly gift option, it's easier than ever for you to become a member of Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Greetings, this is Mike Kincaid. Please join me for Foreground Music, Sundays 3 to 5 p.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we still have Lynn on the line. What's your other question, Lynn?
I wanted to put on a couple of these drives after I run SpinRite on them. I wanted to run that Cobian backup software. Now, when I install that, what I want to do on my XP machine, which has a 500 gig drive, and both of the backups are 500 gig drives, I was wondering, one, does that save everything to those hard drives in a big wad, or does it save it as individual files that can be retrieved one at a time? And do I have to install it twice, once on each drive? In other words, does it run from the drive or does it run from the computer? Where is it installed, actually?
We're not entirely sure, but we're frantically looking. There are two backup programs.
Better with Google than I am.
Yeah, backup programs generally fall into two different classes.
Yeah.
There are ones that make an archive that compress everything down into a single file. Retrospect is one I know of that does that. And then there are backup programs that give you individual files. Silver Keeper is another one I use that does that, to give you an individual file. There are advantages both ways. A lot of people like making a bootable backup so that if your main computer or main hard drive fails, you just boot your external drive and keep running until it's up. And in that case, it has to be individual files.
It is individual files, essentially.
Cobian is.
Yes.
Wonderful. Great.
Yeah. And
it's
so,
free.
Right. It's free. Mm-hmm. And you can run it in two different ways, either as an application, which means you start it and run it, or as a service, which means it runs in the background and does whatever it can when it can.
And Dave has used it, so does it run pretty light, Dave, or does it...
Yeah, no, I have it scheduled to run each night.
Oh, so you really aren't, you don't notice it because it's done.
Yeah, I don't even know it exists. Matter of fact, I periodically go to the computer where it's installed just to make sure that it's backing up my accounting and all my Word documents and all that type of stuff that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff. And like I said, yeah, it runs every night at midnight. So I just periodically, you know, I've got a reminder on my iTouch to at least once a week just to make sure, and I go and check to make sure everything is still running smooth, and I've been running it now for, 9 months.
And that's a big thing to keep in mind if you have automatic backup software. Make sure it's still running automatically every now and then.
Too many folks getting, and something will happen to their machine, it hiccups, and maybe the application needs to restart. That's why I've got a reminder.
When they go to restore a file, they find out that their backup quit working 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, just set yourself a reminder to...
Well, see, what I want to do is I got the two 500 gig backup drives. I want to put one on, let it run for maybe a week or two, and then keep the other one elsewhere.
Yep, a rotating backup with an offsite copy.
Right, that's why I wanted to know whether I got to install it twice so that it's on each drive.
No.
But what you're going to have to do is...
Well, the first time it runs on each drive, it will take a lot much longer time because it's backing up everything.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be out of sync, though. It depends if it looks for changes or if it keeps a record of changes, or if it has a multi-drive. What do they call that? Father, grandfather.
Yeah,
child.
It doesn't. It seems to just be. It backs them up. You can compress them if you want, but it just backs them up. How many computers do you have in your home?
Well, two that I actually use.
And
but
you want to back them both up or just
up one
of them? You only need to back up one?
Yeah. The other one is a Vista machine. I hate it, but it's the faster machine, but I'm not going to back it up. I don't keep stuff on it that matters.
Well, what you might want to do, and this is just a thought, all the stuff that you want to back up is in a directory or a directory under that directory, right?
That, I'm not sure. You're over my head now. I'm only a few years into computing.
All right, well, listen, let me just explain this. If all of your stuff is under one directory, like My Documents.
I think it is.
Okay. Then what you can do is connect the two computers together on a little mini network so that they can see each other and share that My Documents directory with the other computer. And I won't tell you how to do that right now. Just think about this, and if you like it, then...
I do. I love that idea because I've been thinking about it.
Then what you can do is you have one 500-gig drive on one machine, one 500-gig drive on the other machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you run one backup at midnight and the other backup, backing up the same set of files on that first machine at, say, 3 a.m.
Okay.
Now you've got a complete copy on both drives simultaneously. And if the two drives are, let's say, on different circuits in your house.
I got UPSs on them anyway.
And you've got UPSs on them and things like that. The chances that both of them will go, that all three, the machine and both backup drives, will go simultaneously.
Pretty small. Yeah.
So that gives you two complete backups which is not quite as good as two complete backups at a separate location, but it's still way better than 90% of the population is doing.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks like Cobian does do rotating backups, so you can have multiple drives. The trick is each drive has to have a different letter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So when you plug in your first drive, you know, assign it letter F, and the second drive, assign it letter G, for example.
Yeah,
so
one,
that Cobian knows the difference
yeah.
between them.
Right. So when you do your backup, Cobian will see two drives, one of them being local and the other one actually being off the other machine.
Or you can do them both on one machine too. If you want to back up
yeah,
one drive
is,
for a week and
machine,
then another drive.
If that machine blows up and takes out the drive with it electrically.
Well, yeah. So he's backing up the one drive and then taking that off site and backing up to the second drive.
He can do that too.
Yeah.
Any of those will work. Okie doke?
Yep. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. There's an amazing number of possibilities when it comes to to backing up.
But it's not something, again, you know, like we were saying before, it's something folks got to get in the habit of doing. Then once you do it, then periodically you've got to check it.
Yeah, because, make sure it's backing up and make sure you can read your backup drive.
Yeah, I mean, just periodically, you know, have it go in and say that you want to retrieve one particular file. Create a test file. Have it in a folder. And then this way you could test the backup by going in, saying, all right, I want to restore. And you restore that one file called test. That way you're not damaging or writing over any other particular file. Right. And you can...
And make it a fairly large file.
Yeah.
You know, copy a large image or an audio clip of some, you know, a song, and just change the name to test.mp3 or test.jpeg or whatever it is, so you've got a large enough file to be a legitimate test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then that way, you know, like you say, you periodically, you know, delete it and then go searching for it and have it put it back.
So what I do is I use rsync, which copies only the changes. Copies them every night and saves a log. I look at that log every morning to make sure stuff that I did yesterday got backed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then once a week, I randomly pick a file that I backed up during the week to restore actually to another machine, because they're just files on a disk off-site, actually, at my server somewhere else. And so I then just pull one of those files down and make sure it's legit.
But, you know, it's getting into the habit of that. And like you
and
said,
then I back that up on tape.
Hey, you know,
backup, I'm a belt and suspenders guy, and I'm still worried.
Until you lose it once, you know, and I mean, I know Steve has
once
had
is
it
all
too.
It takes.
You know, folks sit there and say, oh, I meant to, or I should have, and all this other stuff. Until you get bit once, you won't realize it, and then you will be a convert.
We had one customer, and we feel so sorry for her. She bought her backup drive. She took it home. She took the drive out of the box and was reading the manual on how to do everything, and her main hard drive died.
Oh, my heavens.
If she'd have skipped reading the manual and just plugged it in, it might have worked.
One of the things that I learned at work is that there are a bunch of – one of my machines just died, and it died hard, and it took the hard drive with it. It just blew up. There was magic smoke coming out of every orifice in the machine. One of the things I learned is there's a whole bunch of stuff you don't back up that you forget. Because, for example, my password file is encrypted like 15 ways from Sunday with 2K encryption stuff, so it's pretty safe.
Yep.
But it was on that drive, and I wasn't backing it up.
Your email folder is not necessarily in your documents folder.
Right, so you have to back that up separately.
Right, back up your
whole. There are a bunch of utility programs I use, Tomboy Notes, for example. Those are not in my... were not in my documents folder, so they weren't being backed up. So now I've got all these extra things, all the little scripts that I wrote to do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any little utilities that I downloaded that have data in them that may save their data somewhere
any
else.
Any of the accounting stuff and everything else, like if you're
all
using QuickBooks
exactly.
or Quicken and all that, or your tax program.
Don't assume they're being backed up. Check to see if they're being backed up.
Verify. Because like you said, 10-to-1 odds, like QuickBooks. QuickBooks puts it in the Intuit folder within the programs folder.
Which is not my documents.
Correct.
It's a stupid place to put it anyway, because you might throw that away and install a new version. So it should be in your documents folder.
Yes, it should. Absolutely, it should.
But, you know, that's, again, we just can't stress it enough. And, you know...
We actually had a customer get mad at us once because she said nobody told her that she had to have a second copy of all her important stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, we're trying to tell everyone now. Same to your hard drive, it failed. You need to have a second copy of it. Like you have the title to your house in a safe deposit box in the bank. What? Nobody told me I should do that.
Yeah, right. So yeah. You got to take a little personal responsibility, and you got to think things through. If you're talking about backup, think about every single program you run. Is it something you can readily restore off a CD? If not, then maybe it's time to back it up. If it is, does it have data? If it uses data, where are those data stored, and am I backing them up? Or do I not care if I lose it? You know, a bunch of people use external programs like Time and Chaos to keep track of their stuff, their calendars and their contacts and things. Are you backing those up? I don't know. Look and see. Where do they save the files? Look at your backup log and see if, in fact, those files are going there. Those are important things, particularly with Intuit, which doesn't save it in the standard place. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier and more often. I want to thank everybody on Twitter, on the IRC chat, on the Ustream, on Facebook, on Mars. I don't really care where you are. Thank you. On the Jazz 90.1 audio stream. We want to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back next week. Longest running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
In celebration of Black History Month 2010, Jazz 90.1 proudly salutes African-American jazz musicians. Throughout the month of February, we will present biographical vignettes of great jazz and blues artists like Alan Toussaint, John Coltrane, Wynton Marsalis, Nancy Wilson, and Roy Hargrove. Be listening each weekday at 7:40 a.m., 12:40, 4:40, and 8:40 p.m. when Jazz 90.1 will honor a different African-American jazz musician. For a complete listing of artists featured, visit